everybody, and welcome back to the Diecast Movie Podcast. My name is Michaela, and I'm joined here with my dad, Steve, and my brother, Ben, to do another movie review. It has been a while since the three of us have been together for a movie review, but we have finally gotten around to it due to getting our busy schedules all figured out so we could all see the same movie and record an episode about it. Just to give a quick heads up to all of you listening to us, this movie review will in fact contain spoilers. There will be spoilers in this movie. This is a new movie that just came out this year in 2023. And there will be spoilers. So now is your opportunity, if you have not seen Godzilla Minus One, to turn off the episode and go see the movie and then come back and watch the episode. Or listen to the episode. There's no video component to this episode.
But you can watch the movie trailer while you're listening to this episode in endless loop, and then you'll get an idea.
Yeah. All right, so this episode was from the last time we did a die roll, which was my die roll, and I got to pick either a documentary or a foreign film. I obviously picked a foreign film. And I'm just going to go ahead and read the synopsis of Godzilla Minus One. Japan is already devastated by World War II when a new crisis emerges in the form of a giant monster.
That sums it up pretty quick and easy. And I think it's a succinct, nice thing. Of course, we're going to, as Michael already mentioned, we will be spoiling the movie all the way through, because in order to really discuss this movie with its themes and underlying stuff that we want to bring up, I think it just has to be spoiled to go through it. But as she warns you, if you don't want to have any spoilers, please pick this episode up after you see the movie. When this episode comes out at the end of 2023, I believe Godzilla Minus One is still supposed to be in theaters to January 4th, but it keeps getting extended because it keeps doing the well at the box office. So who knows? It might go even deeper into January.
Yeah, that's correct. So who would like to kick off this review? Ben, you've been rather quiet. Would you like to kick us off for the review of Godzilla Minus One?
If we were just going to start off with some of the things that we liked about the movie, I would say that I liked that the focal point of the movie isn't Godzilla, the monster itself, but rather the human characters, as we follow one character specifically throughout the entire film, which is Koichi Shikishima, who was a kamikaze pilot in World War II that ended up not crashing his plane into the enemy and instead landed because the war was essentially over at that point. It really follows his journey throughout the entire movie and shows how debilitating the war was to Japan, and also how just when they started to build their lives back, Godzilla appears.
And to tag on to what Ben's saying with the kamikaze pilot, I just enjoy his journey, because really the journey is his. I mean, if you're going to enjoy this movie, you have to enjoy him and what he's going through. I mean, it is a Godzilla movie too, but I mean, he is the focal point of the story, and the survivor's guilt, the guilt of feeling like he was a coward, is thoroughly explored in this as he goes through different aspects of his journey and how people react when they find out that he was a kamikaze pilot, because in their minds, well, you're a kamikaze pilot, what are you still doing alive? Because obviously, for those who don't know, kamikaze pilots would fly into the ships or whatever and sacrifice themselves. And how he goes through this and how things keep happening, the further the guilt. But what also has a big impact on him is, as Ben said, when he doesn't follow through in his kamikaze mission, he says he had a malfunction. So he lands on Odo Island, to the base, a repair base that's there for kamikaze pilots. And while there, and they find that there's nothing wrong with his plane, and I love how the head mechanic comes up to him and says he understands. you know, because it's near the end of the war. They pretty much see the writing on the wall. They're going to lose. Why sacrifice your life for a cause that is lost? Is the unsaid thing between the two of them. And Godzilla, pre-radiation Godzilla, shows up on the island and is a lot smaller than he will be later in the movie. He doesn't have the atomic breath, but is still extremely terrifying in this film. Shows up and basically destroys just about everybody else on the base except for those two. And he has, the kamikaze pilot has that guilt with him because the head mechanic gives him the pictures of all the men that died, and he has to carry that with him, and knowing that he is, did not do the action that they wanted him to do. They wanted him to fire his plane's machine guns on Godzilla to hope that they would save them all, and he froze. And he's always going to wonder, like, if he would not have froze, would he have saved them all? And it's such a thing to live with, that guilt of surviving, and how they show it each night when he tries to sleep. He has those dreams, or really nightmares, and how he has to go through all that trauma from the war, I think is done so well in this actor's portrayal.
I agree. This actor's portrayal of the PTSD that the kamikaze pilot, Koichi Shikishima.
And the head engineer was Mr. Tachibana, is how they referred him in the film.
Mm-hmm. The portrayal of the pilot's PTSD and how he's trying to move past that and build a better life for himself, even if it's not the life he thought he would come back to. Because when he does, in fact, return to Tokyo, the area of Tokyo that he lived in was bombed and had suffered great fires, and both of his parents perished in those fires, along with the children of one of his neighbors. But he still goes back and starts to rebuild and go through, and that's when we meet one of our other main characters, Noriko Oshii?
Yes, Noriko Oshii.
Noriko Oshii, who is a young woman that is being chased by police when she and Shikishima meet, and he tries to stop her because they're calling her a thief, and she shoves a baby in his arms, and then they end up living together.
And a baby that's not even hers, because the baby's mom perished and she asked her to take care of him. So here she's taking care of a child that's not her own. He's taking care of two people that he's not related to, and how their relationships all develop, which just goes, again, to show in countries and lands where that are so destroyed, how people and humanity will work with each other in some of these cases. Not always, but in this particular case, working together to try to rebuild what semblance of lives they used to have and how they go through that.
I think the thing that makes this movie so enjoyable is that there's a, without Godzilla, there's still a movie. If Godzilla wasn't in the movie at all, you still had a movie based on what was happening in the plot. You didn't need Godzilla and then have a little bit of fluff around the edges for the characters to act with. You had a movie that they could have been in, and then you added Godzilla to it. It's not just, oh, this monster's destroying Tokyo. Oh, and here are some people that are following it around. It was, here's a story that's going to take you through a wide range of emotions, and then here's this second, almost natural disaster-like event that's going to impact their lives.
Yeah, it's different from the, like, American Godzilla movies, like the, what was that most recent one?
Oh, Kong, Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah, Godzilla versus Kong, where you really need Godzilla and King Kong to have a movie. Like, The rest of it would not stand up if you didn't have the two of them in the movie. Whereas with Godzilla Minus One, you could take Godzilla out and have a wonderful historical drama biopic type moment, and it would still be as impactful without him there. He just adds, as Ben was kind of saying, he just adds to it and adds to the people who are already downtrodden and trying to rebuild from this war being just hit again by another thing, another disaster. And then how are they going to pick back up? How are they going to handle it?
And if you can get that from the title, because a lot of people say, why is it called Godzilla Minus One? Because after the war, Japan is at zero. And with Godzilla showing up, it puts him at minus one, below the below zero level. So they're still, it's like they're just starting to rebuild, but they haven't gotten to where they're at one or two or three. Suddenly they're just thrown backward to below where even they think they can get. And I agree with both of you that the human drama can be supported and made into a movie of its own. But I want to make sure listeners know that Godzilla is a featured part of this movie. In the beginning, when I said about Odo Island, and then later on, it is an impact. So it's not like Godzilla is some afterthought. I just want to make sure people know that Godzilla is, when he shows up at Japan, it is spectacular in such a destructive way, and how his impact of going through and the destruction, the tragedy, everything that's happening to all these people, you just feel it. And I think this is one of those few portrayals in a Godzilla movie where Godzilla is the most terrifying thing you could ever see. And you can see why people would be scared and repulsed. It is a walking natural disaster. And there's no escape from Godzilla, or is there?
Yeah, and it's, to go off of what Dad was saying, Godzilla is throughout the whole movie. He's not just like thrown in there in the middle in like a weird kind of segue. He is present beginning, middle, and end of the movie. Ben and I were just kind of saying that the acting itself, the other part of the movie that did not necessarily revolve around Godzilla, was of such quality that it could have been its own movie. So it's really kind of like two movies in one.
Yes, especially compared to, not to knock the other Godzilla movies, but especially compared to the other Godzilla movies, the non-Godzilla portions of the movie tell a full story. In several of the other Godzilla movies, they really don't. They're incoherent at times. In this one, you can tell that the script is extremely well developed. There are parts of the movie that are somewhat predictable, but the movie still carries a very strong emotional impact, especially if you see it in a theater. The way that they used the music from the original Gojira film was incredibly impactful, and it's just, for a giant monster movie or a kaiju movie, it was probably the most emotionally impactful one that I've ever seen.
I know when Ben and I saw it the first time, I saw the movie twice, once with Ben and then once again with Michaela. And I know when Ben and I got done seeing it and we were talking on the car trip home, Ben said, this is a movie you don't want to see another movie right after. You want to have a chance to process what you were going through. If you want to talk more about that.
Yeah, you just, like, you go through such an emotional experience during the movie that you just, you don't want to do anything afterwards. You want to sit and kind of be alone and not be forced into something. You don't want to immediately go and start watching another movie or listening to music or anything. You kind of just, it's like after you've seen the movie, it's still impacting you for a good length of time. It's like you can still feel the shock of the movie reverberating in you.
Exactly. And I know both times I saw it, I felt the same way. And I think this movie, to me, yes, it's a monster movie. Yes, you can call it a horror film. I call it more of a drama than anything, because as Mikhail and Ben already brought up, the human drama is so powerful that carries through. And I think and you care so much about the characters. We've only talked about a couple of them so far, but there's more of them that you get to develop, and they're all interrelated with each other, which I think is the big thing of how it's able to sell the story to you. And then you have Godzilla, this force of nature, like I said earlier, that cannot be stopped. And how are you going to take care of that? And you feel the hopelessness from some people, but also you see the spirit of the community rising together when the government has failed them and other governments have failed them. And they have to now rise up and try to fight off this undefeatable foe in their minds with a plan that has so many holes in it that it could fall apart, but it could also work if everything goes just the right way. And the spirit of seeing them, knowing that, you know, how are we going to succeed in this? But if we don't try, then it's all doomed anyway. And I think that I love that those movies that show the human spirit and the willingness to go against odds that are just immeasurably against them, you know, so high against them. It's just amazing. Michaela?
Yes, and I think that spirit gets very much emphasized by the captain of the boat that Shikishima starts working for after his run with the army.
Akitsu.
Yes, Akitsu. He's very much a, if not us, then who kind of motivator. And at one part in the movie, so Godzilla has gotten accidentally or coincidentally hit with a nuclear blast during supposed, like, nuclear testing. And he's been on a path of just sinking vessels headed straight for Japan. And Japan realizes, oh no, we're going to get attacked by something. So they not only send out this giant warship that they've just gotten back, was headed to the UN to be decommissioned or sent to them as a part of, like, Japan joining the UN. But it's rerouted to essentially try and protect Japan from Godzilla. They have a lot of faith in it, but they also send out these two small wooden vessels.
One of them is wooden. The other one is metal.
No, they're both wooden.
They're both wooden.
They're identical. They're identical.
They're identical because the whole purpose of them going out and being wooden is that they won't attract the mines. So they are twin mine sweepers, so to speak, to get the mines up.
I knew the one that the characters were all on was wooden. I thought the other one was metal.
They're completely identical. They have between them, they have a line that has essentially pair of scissors on it, like a cutter, to cut off deep sea mines or, I guess, shallow sea mines and have them float to the surface to be exploded instead of accidentally hitting a cargo vessel or a fishing boat, things like that nature.
Exploded via machine gun.
Yes, they have, I think it's a 10 millimeter.
16.
A 16 millimeter machine gun on each boat to shoot these mines out of the water. And Shikishima is actually hired to shoot the mines as a gunner due to his experience as a fighter plane pilot. And these two boats were sent out to essentially defeat Godzilla, was the plan. And at first they were talking like, oh, who's going to get him first? Who's going to get all the credit? We need to get him before this warship so that we can have the glory. And then the sister vessel gets eaten in one bite, essentially. Godzilla comes up, grabs it in his mouth, and just takes it straight underwater. And that was when the captain said, we shall run.
Now, to put some clarity on this, when he says, we are looking for, that's between the two captains. There's these four-man vessels.
Shikishima was immediately saying, we need to leave now.
And the guy they called Doc, who we come to find out is basically a genius inventor with military type things and coming up with planes. He's the scientist. He also said, yeah, we should go. And this is before Godzilla showed up. And the fourth member of their group was always referred to as the kid who was never in the war, who wishes he was in the war, not understanding what war is like. And the other three, especially the kamikaze pilot, is adamant, but no, the war you should be happy the war ended and happy you never went there. And that is something that even the captain later in the movie tells the kid, you should be happy you never went to war and hopefully you never will. And that's such a true story for people to understand, is that nobody ever wants to go into these situations. But yeah, so they didn't want to fight Godzilla, but of course, I love the four of them together because it reminded me so much of a movie we talked about early in our series of movies, way back in an early episode when Alistair Hughes joined us and we talked about Jaws, because here you have the crew, yeah. And there, of course, that's a three-man crew, but here you have four, and it's kind of, and they have the interplay with each other, but it's very similar to the Jaws theme and of the guys on the crew. It's a wooden ship and basically not having the right materials to do the job.
No, essentially, by the time this tiny wooden boat is fighting Godzilla, they have two underwater mines that they have collected onto the boat and their machine gun. That's about it.
It's actually, for something that sounds somewhat horrific, it's a very funny section of the movie. And there are different comedic parts of this movie. It's not all just straight drama and depression or elation. There are several comedic moments throughout. And this strikes as one of the funnier portions of the movie. For example, they have the mishaps with the underwater mines where they're trying to deploy it and then they're trying to set it off, but the cable to set it off had broken.
Or even at the very beginning when Godzilla shows up, the captain goes to start the boat to flee and the engine isn't working, and so he's yelling at Doc to get it working, and Doc saying he's having a little trouble but he's working on it.
So Scotty Kirk, you know, it's like a Star Trek thing. It's like, Scotty, we need power. It's coming, Captain, you know, and of course he gets it working just in time. But the Jaws reference is even better because that second mine goes into his mouth, which is so much how the Jaws movie ended with the shark, Bruce, getting destroyed with the, the oxygen tank?
Yeah, I think it was an oxygen tank in his mouth, and then they, just like in this movie with the machine gun, they shoot it.
Yep. And of course, it does have a devastating effect on Godzilla.
Oh, yeah.
Where you think, anybody that would never have known a Godzilla movie before would think, did they just win? But those of us that know Godzilla knows he has one thing that is his ace in the hole. And that is what, guys?
Regeneration.
He can regenerate quickly.
He always comes back.
Yes. And then after the first mine strikes him, they start shooting the machine gun at him, and the evaluation of the machine gun is completely ineffective.
That is true.
The whole time, the captain's basically facing the opposite direction, just trying to go as fast as possible.
Yep. And then the big ship they were waiting for shows up.
And they've never been happier to see it in their lives.
Especially because they lost their engine.
Yes.
Yes.
Just as the second mine goes off in Godzilla's mouth, they think they've won, and then he basically comes back from the dead. They're saved. Blew up almost the back of their boat, too.
Yes, the shockwave from the... because they were not far enough away from Godzilla when they detonated the underwater mine in his mouth. So the shockwave, it threw them... It caused, it gave the fighter pilot a head trauma, and it broke the kid's arm, which comes into play later in the movie a little bit. and just kind of knocked everybody kind of off kilter, including the ship.
And if I remember right, the ship was a cruiser class that came up, and you got to love the special effects or the CGI, because when Godzilla's come standing out of the water and he's right next to the ship, I mean, it's just amazing how, like, the ship is getting throttled. It is getting destroyed. And, yes, you see some of the crew, the ones that are on deck, but you can also see the torrents turning and all of them firing point blank at Godzilla right in the chest, which causes him to go underwater. And, again, you think they did it. They succeeded. And this is the first time they show that Godzilla has a new weapon.
The heat breath. Mm-hmm. Straight up from underwater, a blue blast goes through the ship, blows it apart. And then luckily for our main characters, Godzilla has completely forgotten about them. Swims the other direction.
Yes, luckily for them, bigger fish showed up that were not them.
And also the smoke from the destruction helped hide them, and Godzilla probably just, like, you know, it's really, you think about it, as big as Godzilla is, their little minesweeper boat is so small that it's not going to be a thing that draws his attention anymore, and he just kind of goes
and
on.
And it's probably a good thing their motor went out, because that wasn't, like, sending it. They kind of dead-fished it a little bit. I think later on they say they were airlifted out.
Yes. And I do like it where they're definitely, for most of the movie, you're following the kamikaze pilot's POV, because anytime he passes out, it jumps in movie time to when he wakes up again. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always hold true, because later on there will be scenes that he is not present at when that happened, you know, especially when Godzilla is attacking Japan.
Yes. And one of the other characters that we mentioned earlier, the girl who ends up living with Sakashima,
Noriko,
she ends up getting a job to help support their small family in one of the parts that has been more untouched by World War II in Tokyo. She gets a job there where they have more shops and stuff.
Was it Ginza?
Ginza, yeah. Ginza. Or it's being rebuilt quicker, one or the other.
Yeah, something like that. And that just so happens. That just so happens to be where Godzilla makes landfall in Tokyo for the first time.
Right on the water.
And what train should he happen to pick up in his mouth but the one
Noriko
is on?
In an incredible tribute to the original Gojira movie, where they almost replicate the entire scene of Godzilla biting a train, half the train's dangling off. It was very, very strong callbacks in this movie to the original Gojira film.
And also, unlike the first one, they're able to show more what's going on inside the train, with practical effects and special effects being intermixed to get an idea what it would have been like as you're getting picked up, and basically she's in there and she survives that. But this is also the only part of the movie that's about to come up is the one part that I had the most trouble with suspension of disbelief. I'll give it to the film, because every film has that one little spot. Our kamikaze pilot is at home when Godzilla makes the landing. Here's the radio report. And then we see her walking around. Godzilla's stomping for town. And she falls over and she's basically just stunned. Godzilla's coming towards her and the rest of the crowd. And then he shows up. Somehow found her in that huge crowd, in all that wreckage. I don't know how far he had to travel. She took the train, but yet he was able to get there quicker. So I find it that was the only part of this.
He did have a motorcycle.
I agree. He did have a motorcycle, but still.
It's pretty far.
It's a weird situation where you don't know how far away they live from Ginza, and you also don't know how long it took her to get out of the water, because it cuts from her falling out of the train into the water to her walking around on the street. So we really have no idea how much time has passed. And he does just find her in this incredibly huge crowd of fleeing people. And then we get probably one of the saddest scenes in the film.
It is very heart-wrenching as Godzilla is terrorizing Ginza, this area. People are fleeing. Sakashima and Noriko are standing off to the side, kind of right by an alley in between two buildings next to each other. And you just see Godzilla is just from the tip of his tail to the top of his head is charging up his breath weapon. And they're just kind of stunned. Sakashima is just kind of stuck there. Remember, he has all of this trauma from the previous two times he's faced Godzilla, and he's just kind of frozen in a state of shock. And as the breath weapon and the shockwave from it are heading towards them, Noriko pushes Sakashima into the alley and gets blown away.
Yeah, which was preceding this is Godzilla was being attacked by a group of tanks, which is what led him to shoot the weapon. But the devastation and the aftershock is that was a distance away from the group, and you can just see the buildings all being destroyed by that and the mushroom cloud that it forms. Obvious imagery of atomic bombs in Japan, you know, definitely highlighting exactly that aspect of the movie and of the trauma that they went through, and which was definitely one of the major themes of the 1954 classic, with Godzilla being replayed again. Very well done, and how she sacrifices herself, like you said, to push him in, and then you just see her get swept away. At this point, I don't think there's really anybody that's not having some tears welling up or dripping out of their eyes. I mean, this is definitely one of those, oh, man, I can't believe they did that, you know, type thing. And it really is a shocker.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that this movie came out now instead of in the 70s or the 80s, because they would have been much more brutal with the downer ending, I think, in the 70s or 80s. They would not have had as many characters survive, in my opinion. They would have had a lot more death occur, especially for the main two, Noriko and Shikishima.
I agree with you with the 70s part. The 80s was a lot different in endings than the 70s. The 80s were all the action flicks, like with Rambo and Sylvester Stallone and all that stuff, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, where they're able to get a billion shots put at them and just get a scratch and usually survive and all that stuff. Where in the 70s, you're dead on. It was you could have endings, and it just rip your guts out type endings. And I could see this movie ending differently if it would have came out in the 70s. The 80s, no. But the 70s, I do agree with you.
So then after Godzilla has destroyed this part of Tokyo, he goes back out to sea. And the people of Japan are just kind of like, what are we going to do? What is the government going to do? And the government's like, we're not going to do anything, because if we do anything, the Soviet Union's going to kill us all.
Yeah, and it gets to this, especially with Shikishima, you see that he's in this incredibly dark place personally, where even, I believe it was the captain of the boat, tries to ask him, like, why he never proposed to Noriko, now she's gone and he'll never have the chance. And he eventually cracks and is like, don't you think I wanted to? I can't. The war's not over for me yet. I'm still there. I can't. He has a shrine in his tiny little house where it's the folded up photos of all the people that he essentially blames himself for the deaths of on Odo Island, and then it's a shrine to his parents, and he's had it set up there for years. He very much lives daily with the guilt of everything that happened, and this was just when he thought he could move past it and he could have a life and he could be happy and hope and dream for a future. And then his future got swept away by Godzilla's breath. And now he's essentially gone past his breaking point and is very much in the realm of, what do I have to do to kill Godzilla?
And it's portrayed so well. He has such a dead expression during this part of the movie, where you can just see he's existing, and he needs some kind of purpose again in his life. And that comes up because, as you said, the government says they can't do anything, and then the citizens decide to band together and come up with, for all intents and purposes, you can say it's a cockamamie plan, but it's the only plan. And for any of us that have seen a lot of Godzilla movies,
it's based in science.
Yeah, it is based in science, but you got to go with something. And I just like it where they developed a plan, and the plan is basically, we are going to get Godzilla over a trench in the harbor that's over 1,500 meters deep. And they are going to have this, what is it, a Freon bubbles?
So it's a Freon tank bubble gas. So that way Godzilla's scales, I guess?
So Godzilla is separated from the salt water, so he'll sink.
Rapidly.
Yes. So the
rapid change in altitude will essentially, in theory, crush him.
With the pressure.
Because even deep sea creatures aren't meant to change altitude at that great of a speed.
Like when a deep sea fish gets pulled up too quickly and
inflates. Well, that's the second part, but this is the lower part.
And then plan B is balloons.
Yes. So the Tokyo Balloon Company has created these balloons that are really for creating like a flotilla for sinking ships, essentially. And they're going to strap them in capsules to deploy and essentially in a floaty belt around Godzilla's waist.
And that will hopefully kill him via compression. So basically, as it was summarized by somebody, they're going to use the sea to destroy Godzilla. If that doesn't work, then they're going to use compression to destroy him.
The decompression.
And if that doesn't work, well, they don't really have, in the planning stages, they don't have any options. There's option A, there's option B, and option C is, oh, shit.
Yes. So it's essentially compress him, decompress him. So you're basically trying to crush him, and then you're giving him the bends, hoping that his blood just evaporates inside of him and kills him, basically. And golly, it almost worked.
And I got to say, they did bring up a thing. I think it was the kid when he said, well, why can't we use the two destroyers? So they're going to have two destroyers, yes, to lift Godzilla up. And they said there's not enough pull. They don't have enough strength to lift something that weighs that much, which is an important plot point for later for what the kid's going to do. And during this time, they're having a discussion. And I really love how Doc is, he's all this time during the ship, during everything, he cares so much about the pilot. So much about him is focused on his mental health, trying to get him over. But he understands that he can't get him over, but trying to help him deal with these things and realize what he has in front of him, just like the captain does. You have this woman that you care so much about, it cares so much about you. You have this child that you're raising as your own. Look at what you have here. But he's so stuck in the war because of all the horrors that he's gone through, which is so true, for sadly, for so many people. And how during this meeting, when they're discussing it with the people that need to man the ships, I mean, you need sailors, you need to sell this to them, and how Doc is trying to get the pilot to do this job, you know, to get with them. And I love how he says to him, can you get me a fighter? Now, at this point, we're all thinking, he's a kamikaze pilot, and and that kind of thing, and how he wants to do it. And they do find a plane, not just any plane, but an experimental plane that has, it's very fast, very maneuverable, and so on. And he goes on a mission.
Has a tail wing?
Yes, it's a tail wing plane. It was in the movie, they describe it as being created to defend the inland portion of Japan, like the island part, and it was never deployed to the Pacific area. And it was very much in the meeting, Shikishima almost leaves at one point, but ends up being kind of talked out of leaving. And he was not alone in his thoughts of, this ain't for me, because several of the people there do leave. And then several of them say, well, what if it comes back again and it hits my house, essentially? They started realizing, if we're not the one, this is our best chance to get back to normal.
And this goes back to what I was saying about the human spirit and doing it. And I love how one of the guys says, is this like a suicide run? Is there a chance for us to come back? And Doc says, no, there's a chance we could all return. Like we could succeed. And he goes, that's more than I had before, you know, which is so true. And you have the other guys, like you said, going through, it's like, well, if we don't do it, who will? Let's just get together. We'll go do this thing. And they now have, because who knows what these men have been going through these last several years. Do they have jobs? Are they just as bad as the pilot is mentally? And now they have a purpose in their life, a chance to get their honor back and to go out there and succeed in this one mission and give it all they got. Because now, and I find this so important with Doc's speech just before the night before the mission, where he says, we all, everybody go home and have a night with your family to prepare. And the guys are thinking, oh, prepare to die. And he goes, no. This mission isn't about to fight to the death. This mission is to fight to live, for us to continue on. Because if everything goes right, all of us should be able to return, and hopefully we all do. And I think that's the difference of this mission. That's the difference of this mindset. And Noda, Doc's character, is just so important in expressing that. And I got to say, whoever came up with Doc's hair, I mean, that just sells it all, that he is the scientist dude that's going to come up with the crazy plan that's going to win. And the hair and everything, I mean, he just looks the role. And you think like, yeah, I believe what he's saying. Even though the captain told him later on, there's so many holes in this. And he goes, well, that's the only plan. You have to love it.
What did you just say?
Doc is amazing. Yes.
Doc is amazing.
Yeah, it's like, it's this part of the movie where it's almost like a comeback in a sporting event. You start getting that feeling in your stomach, like, will they really be able to do it? Is this going to be like every other Godzilla movie where they can't do it? Like, what's going to happen here? Is Shikishima going to die? Is he going to have to do his final kamikaze flight? Like, what is actually going to end up happening? How are they going to pull off this crazy plan? How are they even going to get Godzilla over the trench?
Now, yep, say it.
And how they plan to get Godzilla over the trench is for Sakishima to fly the fighter and basically kind of lure him. Well, they do have an original plan. Their original plan is they're going to send a smaller boat out with a sonic.
It has a recording of Godzilla's roar that is going to play underwater and essentially be like a battle call, I guess, like a rival in his territory to attract him to the trench.
He throws that ship into the harbor.
Oh, it should also be noted, they've borrowed like four decommissioned warships that were going to be sent from Japan to the UN. They're like disarmed and everything.
Well, you guys are jumping the gun. Just one second. I want to go to with the pilot. He finds the head mechanic.
Oh, yeah, I was coming.
He finds
to that.
Mr. Okay. Tachibana.
I'll let Mikhail continue on that one since you're hitting there.
So, as I was saying, they have the pilot, Sakishima's going to fly this fighter to kind of harry Godzilla to the trench to kind of keep him distracted while they get these flotation devices and the bubble capsules and stuff around him. However, the fighter plane that they have found has been kind of gathering rust in a hangar for several years, and they need a really good mechanic to fix it, who just happens to be Mr. Tachibana.
Well, the kamikaze pilot wants him because of Odawan. It's basically to redeem himself. He wants to get this man because also he has to show that I can do this. In order for his war to end, he has to be able to get this person to understand that he is going to follow through with his mission. He is going to redeem himself for all those men that were killed. And that story is so important because of how it plays later on. But they set this puppy up because he remembered the mine going off inside Godzilla's mouth, causing so much damage. And his theory is, well, if the mine did that, if we juice this kamikaze plane just the right way, and I fly it right into the mouth, which, for those that remember Star Trek, the Doomsday episode, where they take the other type of starship and basically make it a bomb, and Kirk's like, I'm going to fly it right down its throat to take it out. Which my children are looking at me because they have no idea what I'm talking about. But Rich Chamberlain, you know. And
what a shout out.
Anything for you, Rich. A Star Trek reference where I can get them. And just do that. It's just such a good thing to pull off. But I love how that relationship, how that closure is hit during the movie. And how they flash back to their conversation that the two have before he takes off. That is just such an emotional scene. And the way it is played, that the filmmaker has just done an amazing job with this film the whole way and just nails each scene.
And the pacing at this point is getting so rapid. Everything starts happening extremely fast. And it's almost like throughout the entire movie, it's been slowly gaining speed, essentially. And then at this point, there's so many people doing so many tasks that it's almost like there's not enough time to do things. It's almost like now they're on the clock and they're running out of time. And they've got essentially this shot clock that the coach puts on. They're not the coach, the doc puts on them because he's like, Godzilla should be back in about this many days.
10 days.
10 days. That's all we have. And it's like we have this amount of time until the warships get here, and then we have to prepare those. We have the balloons almost didn't get done in time. The plane, I believe they only had like 3 or 4 days to repair the plane to get it ready by the time. So Tachibana has completely gone like off the radar. They could not find him at all, even with the help of the government. Government really kind of refused to help. But at this point, Shikishima realizes that there's only one way that I know will get Tachibana out here. He starts sending out mail to him, blaming him for the deaths of all the other engineers on Odo Island. And boy, did it tick Tachibana off. We almost had no Shikishima flying the plane in the end of this movie because he was about to get knocked off in a back alley.
Well, he could have been knocked off. He was knocked unconscious. I mean, they let him come to say his piece, but I mean, he could have just been killed. And well, that ended that episode, which would have been the 70s.
Let's just say he was very battered and bruised in that cockpit.
But that gets us to where you guys are saying, I guess you could call it the final battle where Godzilla's coming. They figured they had time. They're getting the destroyers ready to go out. And what a scene. Because you see the destroyer out there doing its route with the speakers doing Godzilla.
That wasn't a destroyer. That was a smaller ship.
I'm sorry, a smaller ship. Yes. Well, whatever. It didn't last long. And
the distraction team.
It's supposed to draw them and keep them out in the trench. Well, it drew Godzilla all right, and then Godzilla decided to do a forward pass of that ship into the harbor.
As soon as they started activating their plan to get everybody on the two main warships and get the two other warships out there and ready, all of a sudden they're all standing on the dock getting loading and getting in, and you just see like half of the ship fly by into the dry harbor area. And everybody there standing there like, oh, our plan has failed. What do we do now?
And so they do launch the ships, the destroyers, out to go to their original positioning, and Tachibana leaves the hangar. Godzilla does, in fact, make landfall, but he makes landfall in more of a rural area. So there's not as... There is still some destruction of a farm and some probably squished people.
I hope that dog lived.
I hope the dog lived, too.
That dog was all about the smoke with Godzilla.
You never see the you hear the dog, but you never see the dog. So we have faith.
It's not the size that of dog the dog lives. Fight. It's the size of the fight and the dog.
I hope that dog ran.
Yeah. So you do see Tachibana does kind of pick up Godzilla. Well, not really pick up, but like find Godzilla in the rural area and then lure him back into the water. Kind of shooting at him periodically, and it's kind of almost like, you know, when like your dog or your cat finds a stink bug and like, or a fly, and the stink bug and the fly kind of like land near or on your cat or your dog, and it just infuriates the cat and the dog more, and then they just want to keep chasing it. That's kind of what Godzilla looked like. He looked like a cat chasing a stink bug, and that stink bug was Sakishima in a fighter jet. Sakishima.
And I'm gonna say, I like your analogy with the cat or everything. I was always thinking it's like one of us with the flies in the house. We have the fly sword and we're going from room to room trying to kill the little booger. And the same thing with Godzilla. He's like, oh, this thing is so annoying me now. I just want this is personal. I'm gonna take it out, even though it's such a small, and according, you know, in relationship to Godzilla, insignificant thing, he does the job. He gets Godzilla to follow him out to the harbor so this crazy plan could be attempted.
Yeah. And if you have a cat or have been around cats before, you know the thing the cat's tails do where it like they're so focused on what they're hunting and it flicks back and forth. That's what Godzilla's tail was doing in the water as he followed the fighter pilot out to the trench.
Yeah, and then once they get to the trench, Godzilla sees these two warships. So they rigged two of the warships to basically unmanned, just go full throttle straight to where they want Godzilla to be. They're basically using them as a sacrifice to get the heat breath out of the way. And Godzilla must be pretty upset at these warships by now from all the times they've shot him, because just on sight, he starts powering up. He's like, I'm not in it today. I'm taking you out from a distance. No shots fired at me. He was overly prepared, just incinerates the two of them, and then the plan goes into motion. The longest cable I've ever seen between two ships. As they both float past Godzilla at full speed. Basically, go right into each other almost, making a circle around Godzilla with the most dependable crane I have ever witnessed.
I mean, that wire did not break the whole time. Through the whole movie, that wire did not break. That must have been the best daggone wire in the world. So strong, Godzilla didn't break it.
Well, I want to explain to you guys. See, things made back in the day were made to last. You're used to things made nowadays, which are made to break, so you buy more. But back then, they made these things to last for almost ever. And this just goes to prove it that, man, the good old days sometimes knew how to make the stuff. And of course, the same as this is going on, our kamikaze pilot is constantly keeping Godzilla's attention above so he doesn't go after the two remaining ships and allows himself to get encircled with the cables, which has the freon gas canisters that are going to go off.
And the flotation device things, too, in their canisters.
And oh boy, they just barely pull off their full circle and tightening of Godzilla in time. He's about to heat breath them and take them out when they activate the canisters. He was on his last power-up spine scale, and then all of a sudden, yoink, he's underwater. And that boy dropped fast.
Oh yeah, he dropped. They had this like counter to count how far down the wire had gone, and they just kept calling out numbers, and you just keep seeing it get lower and lower and lower, and you're like, dang, Godzilla is heavy.
And he depowers on the way down.
And he went, I believe, further than they thought he would. And they seemed very much like, oh, this might work. Did we get him? And then all of a sudden, you get the little, oh, he might be alive still. We need to pull him up.
He tugs on the cable and pulls the ship backwards. And that's when you know, oh, yeah, we got a bite. It's a biggie.
Yep.
We might have needed a bigger boat.
I like how you went back to Jaws for me there. Thank you.
When the biggest isn't big enough. Well, and then the balloons worked.
The balloons?
For a little while.
The balloons did work. He was rising. And then, you know, like a toddler in a swimming pool that's done with their floaties and is just like, no more. He ripped them off.
No mas. And this is where the problem starts. So he's only risen about half the distance he went down. And now he has time to decompress. And as the two warships went like, oh crap, let's just try and pull him up on our own. What should happen? But the crane almost ripped off the warship. And then the kid, who wasn't allowed to go with them, comes through. Take
it away, Dad. He comes in clutch, and Dad's going to tell you how.
He comes in with a whole bunch of tugboats. Little tugboats, big tugboats, medium-sized tugboats. I mean, there had to be, I don't know, 50, 60 tugboats. It's a bunch of them. And the kid's going to the radio, like, those of us that were the useless are coming to help. And again, you feel that little cheering going on. It's like the last hurrah. This is it. Humanity, again, is showing that it could band together and do it. And they get tugboats on the ends of each destroyer, and they're pulling Godzilla up. It's working. They get Godzilla up, but
he is not dead.
He is
very angry.
Partway through energizing his breath weapon.
Well, he comes up, he's very damaged. He's also, I want to say
he is very damaged.
It looks like the whole outer layer of his skin just falls off. There is like white scales just ripping off of him.
Yes, he is hurt, and he wants to end this so he can, you know, go recuperate in the bottom of the ocean for a little bit. And who should come zooming in? As everybody's like, this is it. They're taking off their hats. They're like making their like last moments to themselves. Like, this is the end.
It was a good run. We tried.
And then here comes
Shikishima
with his little fighter pilot. The kamikaze pilot that did not kamikaze. And he flies right into Godzilla's mouth.
Godzilla opened up to let out a big heat breath. And he might have got some indigestion.
Now, at this point, everybody thinks he's going to die. But there is then a flashback to... I mean, actually, he takes out Godzilla. You see him parachute up. You know, it's like so.
Well, you don't see the parachute.
You see this little like blip fly straight up as he hits Godzilla.
Yeah, and they flash back to where the head mechanic is talking to the kamikaze pilot and lets him know. And this is something that was brought up by Doc earlier about how Japan, the government, cared so little about people in the war that they didn't have proper supply trains. They didn't have proper protection. And they didn't even have ejector seats in the planes.
Yeah, like and they didn't have the lifeboats. They didn't have the ejector seats.
Correct. And so when you see the head mechanic going through the plane, he makes a point of looking at this one spot for a while. So it's telegraphed, that must be an ejector seat. So it is telegraphed early on for those that are paying attention. But he doesn't explain to the kamikaze pilot to us prior. They do have a talk before he takes off where they get that closure. But now they go back to the rest of the talk where he's like, this is pull this. This is the ejector seat. And he says, live. Live. Don't, you know, which they don't really go much more than that, but it just obviously explains everything. Don't sacrifice yourself. Choose to live, which is Doc's message early on. Choose life over death. Don't just sacrifice yourself. Try to, you know, if you can survive, do it. And Godzilla just falls apart into pieces. And we finally go back to where they get to the dock. And then we find out there's been a little subplot that was going on in between involving his neighbor getting a telegram. And Michaela?
So when Sakashima went to get to the plane, he, of course, at this point in time, didn't know about the ejector seat. So he had kind of written a note and put all his money and everything together and all the things for his daughter and kind of left it in an envelope for his neighbor, being like, please take care of her. Please use this money for her. I'm going to try and protect us. If I don't, kind of like a, if I don't come back, please, please just take care of her. And not too long after he had left, a telegram arrives for him that his neighbor opens up, and she and his daughter meet him at the harbor, and she just kind of starts hitting him, which is like her reaction every time the neighbor sees him is to hit him, because
why not?
He's done something. And she's just being like, you idiot, read this. And you find out that Noriko is in a hospital, that she's like regained consciousness, was able to send out, tell him who to contact for her. Because during all of that destruction in Tokyo, they like didn't know who was who was still alive, who was dead, who to contact for what. And so the last kind of human part in the movie is Shikishima is the fighter pilot going to the hospital with their daughter and seeing Noriko in the hospital sitting there bandaged up. Bandage over her head, over one eye, arm in a sling, alive. And his world is alive. The woman he loves is alive. His daughter is alive. Godzilla is gone.
And his war is over, because that's what he says. And he's finally now able to, they're able to now get married and be a family. Where all three of them are together and live. And is Godzilla dead?
Or is he a twitching mass of cells under the ocean?
I think his heart was still there and was starting to regenerate, so obviously he's coming back.
The sequel, Godzilla Minus Two.
And then things I want to say, this movie's 2 hours long. Ben said it builds up slow and it keeps going through. I never really noticed the movie being slow. It kept moving through, even like the scenes where Godzilla's not in there, when they're really developing the human drama, didn't those scenes moved at a brisk pace and going through the timeline. And I think the movie has very good pacing. It's very well filmed. Acting is great. And out of all the movies I saw this year, this is the best movie I saw this year. And I know Ben asked me this after I got done watching it, like, where would I put it with the rest of the Godzilla films? And I know some of my friends were too. After seeing it twice, this to me is the best acted, best done overall Godzilla film out there. So I consider this one the best, followed by very closely by Gojira. And the only reason I'm separating the two is I cared more about this human relationships. It affected me more on an emotional level than any of the other Godzilla movies ever. You know, I was really drawn in by this family dynamic through this man's journey. And it is just something that is just amazing to see. And hopefully if you're listening to this and it's still out in the theaters, like we said, my reading is supposed to be out to at least January 4th. I highly recommend you see this on the big screen, you know, because it really does it justice. I know you can wait for it to come out on Blu-ray, DVD, or streaming and all that stuff, but the big screen is where Godzilla is really has its most impact, and Godzilla Minus One has an impact. And we'll talk about, we'll give a couple, like, opinions about some other movies this year that we recommend, but what do you guys think overall of Godzilla? Who wants to go first?
I think it's probably the best kaiju movie I've ever seen. It's by far the most emotionally engaging. It's very pungent in how it connects with you. And it's just, there's not much bad to say about it. You can nitpick certain aspects of it, but it's so engaging and just stays with you after you watch it. It's extremely, extremely good. Maybe not a movie to watch several times or watch frequently, but it's a very impactful event to see in the theater. And the subtitles don't really take away from that. The movie is entirely in Japanese, and it's so well acted that based on what they're expressing, you really don't even need the subtitles at times. Especially when it's just Noriko and Shikishima together. We didn't really touch on it, but he has multiple full-on breakdowns after having horrific nightmares at their home. And she's really the only person holding him together at that point. And it's the relation, they're so close to each other that you can really tell that for each other and for their daughter, they're the only things keeping each other going. It's so impactful. It's definitely the best Godzilla movie. I don't think it's even close.
Michaela?
I agree. It is one of my favorite Godzilla movies that I've seen. And as I was saying earlier, I did like, was it Godzilla King of Monsters was one of the newer ones. And then was it one of the, yeah.
You're talking about, there's two versions of Godzilla King of Monsters. There's the one with Raymond Burr, which came out in the late 50s, and then there was the one that came out just a few years ago by Legendary. You're talking about the Legendary one.
Yeah, the Godzilla movies that Legendary has put out recently. I would say this is better than all of them. Though, not to say that those are bad movies. Like, they're good. I enjoyed watching them, but Godzilla Minus One is much more of a overall experience. Everything works together. Everything, there's like nothing jars you out of the movie or gives you like, well, why is that even in here? How does that connect with the rest of the plot? Everything is just so tightened in and ties together well, and everything comes full circle. And it's just, it's so good. And I know Dad had said that some of our friends at the Classic Horror Club podcast.
Yeah, the Classic Horrors Club podcast. Rich and Jeff, they sent us some feedback about the movie. So we're going to hear them talk about that, Godzilla Minus One, their reactions to it. And then as soon as we're done hearing their reactions, we're going to each pick two movies that we want to highlight that we saw this year and just briefly talk about those. So that way people get a little extra for this end of the year episode.
Richard, Steve asked people to send their thoughts about Godzilla Minus One. My initial thought was, what more do we have to say? A lot has been said about it.
I kind of thought the same way. I thought, gosh, are we going to tread on ground that they've already tread in the episode? But Steve did bring up a good point. Everyone's got something important to say about it. There's a lot of good stuff to say about it. I mean, let's be honest, this is probably, well, it is easily one of the highlights of the year, in a year in which we've had probably more misses than hits at the box office. And certainly when it comes to a franchise, I think everyone was excited about this. We didn't know how it was going to go, considering my own personal history with Shin Godzilla. This one, you and I both saw it on the preview night. I saw it technically, 2 hours before you did, just a smidge earlier than you, but I think that was probably one of the quickest. What did you think about it? Loved it, loved it.
Like we've said, overwhelming praise for this. One of the things people say is that the characters are ones you care about and you're invested in their outcome. I add to that that there are characters, period.
Yeah.
Most Godzilla movies, sure, they have people playing roles, but you never really get much of a backstory and they're sort of generic. You really don't care. Well, you care, but what happens to them doesn't really have an emotional impact. Richard, I cried in Godzilla Minus
One. Oh, absolutely. When the one character kind of gets blown away by Godzilla as he was attacking Ginza, she kind of pushes the guy into the alley and then she goes flying off. Oh my gosh, I love their story. There was a love story between the two of them as he was dealing with his own issues related to being a former kamikaze pilot and all of the stuff that went with that and the fact that he survived. That just was heart-wrenching. I was invested in all of the characters, the miscellaneous group of guys on the boat. I came out of this movie wanting to see more of their story. Refreshing to see a movie with characters that you became invested in. I've heard from more than one person besides yourself that they cried in this movie. When a movie can make you feel an emotion like that, you've got something special.
Shout out to the cast. I don't really know any of them. I'm not aware of seeing them in anything else, but to make the characters believable and care for them, you've got to have a charismatic cast. And certainly, I think they all did a fantastic job. Crew from the boat, the camaraderie of them, the care and concern they had for each other. It, in a way, that was such a positive.
I was legitimately worried for them as they're on that boat and Godzilla is swimming after them. That scene was right out of Jaws. I don't think I've ever seen a movie that I can think of where Godzilla was such a threat. They're throwing mines off the boat. That was intense. Sitting on the edge of your seat kind of moment. You don't know. They could have blown up all those guys. You were hoping they didn't. An amazing scene. Incredibly well done.
It's in our human nature to compare. We can't just watch this without talking about its relationship to the other Godzilla movies.
This movie feels very different in tone, and I don't feel it would be fair to sit there and compare it to those older films, because this is a better film in many ways. It certainly has a bigger budget than those films ever did. You're looking at some amazing CGI work. You're looking at amazing character development. Those movies don't necessarily have that, but that doesn't mean they're not good. To say, well, this is better than all of those. Yes, technically, but I have a hard time doing a compare and contrast to those older films. It's a little easier for me to say, well, this is obviously the best Godzilla film of the modern era. But I think even comparing it to the current run of the American-made films, I don't even think that's necessarily fair because it's not the same type of film. Those films are much more escapist. They're all about the big monster battles, which we all love. This really wasn't about that. We got some amazing moments with Godzilla causing mass destruction in ways that he's never done before, some intense moments. For me, this film very much stands on its own. This movie has heart. Classic moment where they had the Akira Fukube music introduced. I mean, come on. As he was attacking Ginza and the train, and there's the music that your jaw didn't drop, and you just, a tear in your eye, like, oh my God, they went ahead and did it. And they kept it up. It kept appearing for the rest of the film. Hard for me to do a compare and contrast.
And I just want to add my specific example. Before I saw this, I would probably say my favorite Godzilla movie, and they change from time to time, but would be Godzilla versus the Smog Monster or Godzilla versus Hedorah. You cannot, it's two different movies. You can't compare. I guess you can say you like one better. Maybe you don't like the drama and the heart, so you do prefer a goofy, silly Godzilla. But on most levels, it's just two different kinds of movies. The main takeaway I've gotten from this, Richard, is that Godzilla has brought us all together. You know how people are on the internet. They're always disagreeing. They're always being bombastic. No one can agree on anything. I have seen not one negative comment. The themes of what people are liking about this are all the same. I'm just thinking, Godzilla, look at the power of Godzilla. He's bringing people together. He's getting rid of our differences. And if we could somehow take the magic of Godzilla and spread it across this real world we live in, did you ever think Godzilla would be able to do that?
This is the feel-good holiday hit of the season, without a doubt. It should stay in the theaters through the holidays, but I don't know if it will. It deserves it.
Steve, thanks again for asking us to participate.
Yes, thank you.
You can find Richard and I at the Classic Horrors Club podcast if you want to hear more delightful banter like this. Once a month as we have our regular club meeting. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jeff and Rich, for your excellent commentary about Godzilla Minus One. As Dad said before we played our clips from Jeff and Rich, Ben, Dad, and I are each going to go through and mention two movies that we saw this year that came out that we wanted to highlight. I feel like we can go around. I'll go first, and then Ben, and then Dad, and we'll each share one and then go back around and share another. So the first one that I'm going to highlight is Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves. I love Dungeons & Dragons. And this was a much anticipated movie for me. I'm a fan of Critical Role and Dimension 20 and just watching tabletop RPG games. I enjoy playing tabletop RPG games, and I was really looking forward to the Dungeons and Dragons movie, but I was also scared of the Dungeons and Dragons movie because I didn't want them to royally mess it up, which I don't think they did. I thought it was great. I enjoyed a lot of the nods and Easter eggs that they put in there, the hidden mimics, and things, the nods to the classic Dungeons and Dragons animated TV show, which I did watch growing up, even though it came out many years before I was born. My dad has it on DVD, so I did in fact see it. It's great. If you're able to get a copy of it, I highly recommend it. Uni the Unicorn, best character. Unfortunately, he was not represented in the cameo, but we can't have him stealing the show or anything. It also stars Chris Pine, one of the best Chris's. He's pretty good. One of my He's
one of the many Chris's.
He is one of the many Chris's. One of my coworkers at work and I were talking about it, and we're like, yeah, we've watched Chris Pine movies a lot, and we're like, what's the first Chris Pine movie he ever did? And it was The Princess Diaries 2, A Royal Engagement. So I think
That's a deep dive.
It is.
Why do you know that?
It's his first movie.
I know more about Chris Pine than Chris Pine knows about Chris Pine.
Hey, what do you want to know what his fan club is called?
What?
Pine Nuts.
Our dog just growled about hearing that. So, I mean, obviously, he doesn't care for it.
Anyway, it was great. He was the perfect bard. It was amazing. I loved it. I loved all the throw-ins of the different spells and different everything. It was so great. If you are into action movies or adventure films, it's not really, well, it's more of an adventure film than an action movie. If you like Dungeons and Dragons, if you like fantasy movies, I would highly recommend Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. A bunch of my coworkers and I are all Dungeons and Dragons fans, and so a lot of us saw it, and we recommended it to some of our coworkers that have heard of Dungeons and Dragons but never played, and they watched it, and they loved it. So you don't even need to know anything about Dungeons and Dragons in order to enjoy this movie. I know I have gone on about this movie for a long time, so I'm going to move it over to Ben. What is one movie that you would want to highlight that you saw this year?
Ooh, one that I saw this year. I would have to go, I know what one Dad's going to talk about, so I'm going to talk about a different one and leave it to him because he really, really loves Sisu, which I know is the movie he's about to talk about just by looking at his face. We saw it together in the theaters. I'm going to talk about Plane, which was a Gerard Butler movie. And I guess Gerard Butler's been on a movie kick lately because I think he had 3 films come out this year. And Plane kind of flew under the radar for a little while, ironically enough. And it's a very concise, well-directed, like, the movie has a complete sequential direction for everything that happens in it. It's very within the realm of possibility, and that's kind of where the movie lives, just like in this that could maybe happen area. And Gerard Butler did a very, very good job as the airplane pilot in the film. It has good action in it. It has a compelling villain. And it has a strong supporting group. I can't remember the character's name, but the co-protagonist.
I think it was Mike Coulter?
Yes.
Who played Luke Cage?
Yes, that sounds right. He was extremely good in the movie. Definitely more of a 1A, 1B protagonist situation than a simply protagonist supporting characters. They had a very strong dynamic in the film. The plot moved very well. The scenes where it was back with the suits in the U.S. trying to figure out what the heck they were going to do were very, very funny. It's just an all-around good film. I'd recommend watching it. It's solid action movie. Solid action movie.
Speaking of solid action movies, I mean, Ben and I made a little goal for ourselves to go out to start this calendar year. We were going to see some of the top-tier movies all the time. We were going to try to go through movies that were like Plane, Retribution, and all these ones that were like a little bit under the radar type, just to see what they're like and give them support. And Sisu was a movie I had circled big time on my calendar because, one, I love the director, Rare Exports. The actor that plays Sisu was also in Rare Exports and a lot of other films that this director does. The action is over the top, non-stop once it gets going, which doesn't take long before it gets going. It's basically about a man who's a gold miner who used to be a soldier in the war, who finds the mother lode and has to get the gold to the bank. And on the way, he has to take care of some Nazis because this is set in World War II. And you just love how he goes through the Nazis. I mean, if you see the trailer for this, you'll know right away if you love this movie. If you watch the trailer and you enjoy the trailer, you'll love this movie. This guy is like unstoppable. He is like the Terminator of soldiers. It is the most fun action movie that I saw this year. I saw John Wick 4. I saw Equalizer 3. I mean, there was a bunch. This is the one that by far was my favorite one. I've seen it since the theater, you know, we on streaming and stuff like that. It's just a go-to one that makes you laugh, smile, and have fun. And it's just, if you love action movies and you haven't seen it yet, see it. I can give it the highest recommend for action movies.
And going off of smiling and having fun, the second movie that I would recommend, which I, contrary to Dad and Ben, who saw many movies in the theater that came out this year, I saw five movies. Two of which were Godzilla Minus One and the Dungeons and Dragons movie I just talked about. The other three were Barbie, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and this other movie I wanted to highlight, The Haunted Mansion. This is the new 2023 version that Disney put out, not to be confused with the classic Haunted Mansion starring Eddie Murphy, which is also a hysterical movie and you should go see it. But this Haunted Mansion movie was so good. The Haunted Mansion is one of my favorite rides at Disney World and Disneyland. I have been to both and I love this ride. It is one of my all-time favorites. It's one of the rides that I want to go to first, and I also want to go to last to make sure it's the first and one of the first and last things that I do in Disney whenever we go. It's so good. There are so many callbacks to the ride in the movie. There are so many good jokes. It just hits so well. It is just so, so good. And to give you some context, Dad and I saw The Haunted Mansion together along with my mom. This was Dad's, I think, his second time. Yes. Seeing the Haunted Mansion, but we did it as a double, kind of a double feature. We went and saw Barbie first, and then we went and saw the Haunted Mansion. And I'm very glad that we saw Barbie first and then the Haunted Mansion, because if it had been the other way around, I would have been very disappointed in Barbie. Because I love the Haunted Mansion. It's got Danny DeVito as a mad professor, constantly wearing a see-through clear plastic raincoat.
Gotta love it.
You gotta love Danny DeVito. He just adds that certain little something to a movie that every movie just needs a little bit of Danny DeVito in it.
And I want to say with The Haunted Mansion, I also love the lead actor in it. He did a great job, and I thought he really helped with the dramatic parts of the film, you know, sell it besides the comedic aspects that we're going through. But I think he did a great thing with all these other characters that were with him.
Yes, he definitely was the thread that was holding them all together, kind of pulling the movie through and showing how all these different people from these different walks of life, these different beliefs and everything, kind of all come together to figure out this mansion that's haunted full of ghosts. But yeah, you should all go and see the Haunted Mansion movie. It's amazing. Hatbox Ghost is terrifying. And I just read an article, they got it to finally work at Disney World. Disneyland, they finally got the Hatbox Ghost trick to work at Disneyland's Haunted Mansion ride, and I believe they should be installing it at the Disney World Haunted Mansion ride as well. It's if you watch anything about the history behind the Imagineers and the making of the Haunted Mansion, the Hatbox Ghost, it's supposed to turn around and you're supposed to see his head, and then it's supposed to appear in the hat box next to him, and it's notoriously never worked. But they have finally figured out how to make it work, and I want to go so bad so I can just see it work like it's supposed to.
Ben?
I think there were quite a few movies that I saw in theaters this year, and there were two movies that I actually watched twice, and I think the one that I want to talk about is Cocaine Bear.
Yes!
Now, if the title Cocaine Bear doesn't make you want to not watch the movie, then you should watch it. And if you're just appalled by the name Cocaine Bear, you should watch it anyway. Because it's extremely funny. Now, it's kind of funny in the way that, like, haha, this bear is on drugs and it might eat people.
It eats a whole lot of people.
But it's funny on the way. Like, they have a cocaine bear. They have some cocaine cubs. It's like a whole genre. It's actually based on a true story, although the bear that ate... So there was a bear that ate some cocaine that fell into the woods during this ill-fated plane smuggling of cocaine in the United States. He dropped out a bunch of cocaine, and then he was going to dive out of his plane and gather it all back up the next day. But he died, and the cocaine was abandoned. This bear ate a ton of cocaine and just died because it was all in its stomach at once. And it's like a local hero in the area. So based on this story, somebody said, well, what if the bear didn't die? And what if the bear just got high instead? And yeah, oh, it was good. And it's even better because you go through the whole thing. It has kind of like, it has a solid human acting group. Not great, not nearly as good as Godzilla Minus One, but not bad by any means. And it has a compelling story, or compelling enough. It has some very funny scenes with these two kids that find a brick of cocaine in the woods. And the one kid's like, oh, I've taken cocaine so many times. The other kid is calling his bluff and then asks him how he does it. And he says, well, I eat it. And then proceeds to put a whole knife blade full of cocaine in his mouth, only to almost vomit. It's very, very funny, but in a dark humor kind of way. I highly recommend
Cocaine Bear. Yeah, Ben and I saw that, and it was a fallen little thing. That was a fun movie, very enjoyable. My second pick is the prequel to Godzilla Minus One, which most people didn't know when they were watching it, that they were watching a prequel, Oppenheimer. And yes, it was interesting. I saw Barbie also, but I did not do that Barbieheimer thing. Ben and I saw, we saw Oppenheimer, and what was the other movie we saw with it?
Was it Haunted Mansion?
No, I did that with McCam. It was the Haunted Mansion.
With me and Patrick.
Yeah, it was the Haunted Mansion. Yeah, so I did Haunted Mansion with Oppenheimer, and then I did Haunted Mansion with Barbie. That's just a weird mixture, but oh, whatever, it worked. But Oppenheimer. Yes, it's 3 hours long. It's a lengthy movie, but it really goes through the drama of what Oppenheimer's life was like during that period of time, during that snapshot, and how well acted it is. Cillian Murphy does an excellent job of playing Oppenheimer, and then how Nolan filmed scenes of the movie in color and in black and white. And the scenes that are featuring Oppenheimer are featured in color. And in the scenes featuring Robert Downey Jr. are black and white. And Robert Downey Jr. is so deliciously evil, you know, as the senator, as he's going through all this stuff, setting up Oppenheimer and how the two go back and forward with each other in some of these scenes when they eventually meet. And how the scenes are going off when they're not together, and how it's interrelated in the storyline going in two different time frames. What happened at the time when they're developing the bomb and then later on. Yes, there are things they could have spent more time on. There's things they could have maybe spent less time on. You can make arguments of this and that. Overall, I enjoyed the picture, and it is one of the better movies that would have been my number one movie of the year if it wasn't for Godzilla Minus One being, to me, for me, as a filmgoer, the perfect movie experience of hitting me emotionally and with the drama, the acting. I think that's what was missing from Oppenheimer, was feeling the total investment with the characters like I got with Godzilla Minus One, where I was just totally moved to crying or whatever. But Oppenheimer is an excellent movie. I highly recommend that. I think I've seen all the movies you guys are talking about. I enjoyed all of the ones, you know, all the six that we brought up. And I hope, listeners, if you have any movies that you want to highlight from 2023 that you saw in the theaters, please send us feedback at diecastmoviepodcast@gmail.com or leave us a message on our Facebook post about what movies that were your highlights, you know, for the through 2023, and what was your favorite one that you saw. That's the beauty of the films. There's so many different films out there that we did not see that we're going to be catching up and seeing that I'm sure are going to be great. I don't know if any of them are going to knock off Godzilla Minus One for me, but I'm looking forward to catching up with those in this coming year.
Yeah, speaking of movies that came out in 2023 that we haven't seen yet, I think I borrowed A Haunting in Venice from the library, which is the Agatha Christie movie that came out, the Poirot.
Well, you might not have seen it.
I was going to say, more movies that you haven't seen
yet. I haven't seen it.
There's one movie that's out that I wanted to see that I didn't get a chance to see, and that's the Boy and the Heron.
Yes, The Boy and the Heron, the new Studio Ghibli movie. I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
And a movie that's currently out as we're recording, The Boys in the Boat.
Oh, yeah, I really wanted to see that one, too. I missed the, is it Taiki Waititi movie about soccer that came out this year?
Yes, there was.
I missed that one. I wanted to see that one a lot. I'll probably have to pick that one up on streaming.
Sometimes time happens. You can't get everything in, but that's the beauty of being able to go back the following year and catch up on these missed opportunities. And that's what I'm saying. I'm looking forward to hearing your guys' feedback as listeners. What are some other movies that you recommend that, hey, everybody go and see? And that's the beauty of having a podcast for film enthusiasts. Everybody here loves different types of films, and that's why we're Diecast Movie Podcast, where we roll a die to decide the genre of the movie, and we don't just narrow ourselves down to one genre, because why limit yourselves when you can have a little bit of everything and have that value of life and enjoyment?
That's right. And speaking of Diecast, who gets the next role? Ben? Ben gets to roll the dice next. Okay, give him a blow for luck. And you have...
I have drama and comedy as my options.
Ooh.
A dramedy, if you will.
That's true. So, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Diecast Movie Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we did recording it. And please join us next time to see which movie we'll pick next.